Welcome to the Booktopia podcast. I'm John Purcell, and I'm here with Lauren Sands to talk about Crazy, Busy, Guilty, her new novel that's coming out. Perfect timing, actually, for a holiday read. Welcome, Lauren.
Thank you, John. Hi.
Crazy, Busy, Guilty. I first read that title and I went, Zeitgeist. You're right. On the, on the money. I felt, when I saw it, it was like I was running around like a headless chicken. And I just went, that is right on the money. What is it about this particular point in history where we all feel like we're stressed and overworked?
I don't know, but I'm addicted to reading articles about how we are so addicted and overworked, and I feel like we're addicted to the feeling of busyness as well. And so the book centres on a single mum who goes back to work when her child is quite small. She's about 6 months old. And just that feeling of needing to do everything perfectly. So, you know, she needs to be like the Martha Stewart kind of mum at home and, you know, do everything for her child. And, you know, she won't give up breastfeeding. She won't do things like, you know, buy pureed food, you know, from the refrigerator aisle of the supermarket. She needs to do everything herself. But then obviously, you know, she's working full time as well, and she needs to do everything there perfectly too. And I just feel like it's this, I don't know, kind of epidemic that people feel like they have to do everything perfectly. You know, I remember being a kid and like, you know, we got takeaway a lot, like, you know, not unhealthy or anything like that. But like my mum never worried about things like that, you know, taking shortcuts. And, you know, I don't think she ever felt like a bad mum because she did that sort of thing. Or like, you know, she was really shit at like making school costumes and stuff like that. So she outsourced that to my nan and that sort of thing. And yeah, you know, she never worried about that. But I feel like
very
our generation, yeah,
very
we do worry
now.
About
everything.
Those things. It's competitive,
yeah.
Isn't it? Yeah.
Well, when you hear people talk, it's like, it was a really busy week. Really? My busy week was busier than your
yes.
busy week.
And all
then
of
I,
that.
I had all this trouble I had to go pick up. Such and such. Run through the big list of all the things that you're doing.
It's one-upmanship of busyness.
And it's like, I'll just take on some more stuff to make myself really feel
totally
incredibly busy.
Yeah,
if you're not busy, you're out.
It's yes. Just, and there's this thing, you know, of the side hustle now, you know, so as well as, you know, having the full-time job and, you know, perhaps having children or, you know, someone to look after in your family, you've then got this other thing, you know, this hobby that you're turning into a business or a job on the side. And yeah, it comes to a point, I think, where something has to give.
And does something give?
Something gives, yes.
So this is a follow-on from your last book, but it can be read independently.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you haven't read the first book, She's Having Her Baby, you can certainly read it, you know, without having read that. That's fine. But I don't want to talk about the first book because there's kind of a big plot twist in that, which you can probably guess from reading the blurb of Crazy, Busy, Guilty. But yeah, you can certainly read it as a standalone book. Yes.
So it's really a fun read, but a sort of a commentary on life as we are experiencing it right now.
Yeah, it is fun. And, you know, I hope it will make people laugh and, you know, perhaps recognize some of their own foibles, you know, and there are a lot of my foibles and flaws in there, definitely. I think it is a, you know, I did want to write a bit of a commentary on the way, particularly, you know, working mums and just, you know, parents in general feel that they have to be everything to everyone at all times. And I just think that's so unsustainable and crazy. And it's certainly not what our children expect of us.
They just want us to go away.
Yeah, right.
Just leave us alone for a bit.
My daughter's four tomorrow and she's like, just away, mom.
Yeah,
just
yeah.
Leave me alone.
No, I do this by myself now. Thanks.
Yeah. She's already embarrassed by me. It's depressing.
So what, tell us a little about Lauren Sams. I mean, where did you, is there a desire to write from an early age? Is it something that has come out of your career as a writer that sort of went, oh, I can't express this in my journalism, I'll have to go into a larger canvas?
Yeah, I did want to write from an early age. I wrote for my local newspaper, the Hawkesbury Gazette. I think I was about 13 when I started writing for them. It was a bit of a Libby Valentine. Libby, what's her name? Libby from Neighbours.
Yeah.
I think the actress's name is someone Valentine. And yeah, I was really...
Holly.
Holly?
Was it Holly Valentine? No.
I don't know. No, that's someone else. Oh, now I'm getting now I'm getting off track. So yeah, I did really want to write from an early age, and I always enjoyed writing, and you know, I found it really fun, you know, something that I really enjoyed doing. And then I got to uni and I studied law for like a second and hated it.
Good decision.
Yeah, yeah. Really hated it. And then I also learned what lawyers do.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not, spoiler alert, it's not like Ally McBeal or anything like that. It's very boring. So yeah, got out of that really, really super quickly. And started doing a media degree and really liked it, and did, you know, lots of history and English, which was really fun as well. And then I started working in magazines, and it was just this dream job where you, you know, got to write about, you know, a mix of like really fun things, interesting things, important things. I worked at Cosmopolitan for a long time. And then I worked at a teen magazine called Girlfriend, RIP Girlfriend. And then I worked at Delicious, food magazine, and now I'm a freelance writer. And as much as I did love working in magazines, I did also have that ambition, I suppose, and you know some sort of desire to write something creative and, you know, make up a world, and yeah, that's what I've done with She's Having Her Baby and Crazy Busy Guilty.
I asked Leanne Moriarty whether she has any friends anymore, because the way in which she observes people around her is pretty intense.
It's so astute, isn't it? It's amazing.
I'm imagining you just sitting there at a baby shower or at a cafe, just watching and just occasional note going down.
Do
friends read the books and go, oi?
Do you know what? A friend who I used to work with at Cosmopolitan rang me after reading She's Having Her Baby, and she said, I know this is me in this book, isn't it? And I said, yes, it is. It was a flattering portrait, but still, she was like, I totally know this is me. Yeah, I picked it up straight away. I was like, yes. You're right. Yeah.
And is that a fairly important part for most writers. I mean, even though Tolkien wrote about hobbits, I'm sure there were friends who went, I'm that hobbit.
Yes, exactly. And, you know, it's, I think it's hard to avoid, you know, as a writer. I mean, I'm just shameless. Like, you know, my husband will be like, could you stop staring at people? Like, it's really obvious that you're eavesdropping on their conversation. But I am really shameless. I'm such a perv, you know, like, I just need to listen and, I don't know. I guess I'm really interested in how people think and the ways that people behave and stuff like that. And the way that, you know, that can be quite funny sometimes, the way people interact. And yeah, picking up on people's sort of foibles is something that I find quite fun. My own.
Writers have suggested to me that in this period of the internet and phones and having access at all times and information coming in at all times, that they're becoming obsessed with every particle of information that's out there.
Yes.
And trying to get on every newspaper and every magazine and trying to be up to date with all the different things that are going on and all the different controversies on Twitter. You know, and it almost blocks the ability to have time to do their writing.
The actual writing. Yeah. It's yeah, that can be quite difficult, especially like, you know, my other job is as a freelance writer. So there is a lot of that, you know.
You've got to be on the pulse, don't you?
Yeah, exactly. You know, I need to read a lot and all that sort of thing. But I think, you know, one of my real guilty pleasures is being on the train and not reading anything and not being tuned in and, you know, not listening to a podcast and just sort of trying to listen to conversations around me. And sometimes I take out my notepad and, you know, write a little note. So people are going to see me on the train now and go, right.
Stay away from her.
Yeah. I'm going to zip my lips around that lady.
Have you ever had a moment where you've heard a little story told and you went, gem, either in your journalism or in novels, and gone, I'm going to use that straight. I don't have even turned around to look at who it is. I don't want to know who it is. I'm just going to take that story and run with it.
Yes, I had this, I haven't used this yet, but I just feel like it's going to be a good scene in some way. This guy, young guy in his 20s, and a girl were talking about how the guy got a really bad review on Airbnb, and he was just devastated. Like, he was like, I cannot believe it. And, you know, it was going on, you know, for like stations and stations and stations. And I was just thinking, wow, you know, like, this is interesting that this guy would be so fixated on this, you know, this little review that he got. Yeah,
it's like an author. I mean, some authors come in here to admit to allowing, like they might have, you know, 1,500 good reviews, and it's just that one bad review, and they just go over and over and over again.
Yeah.
But if you're opening your home or your apartment that you've made all nice and you've got everything right,
yes,
and it's about you, and then they go, you suck.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. I think he was really personally offended by it. Yeah, yeah. So, and it was just, and then the way that the woman he was talking to was responding, she was sort of really G-ing him up and saying, you know, oh, I can't believe they said that about you either. That's so terrible. And, you know, you need to write back. And yeah, it went on and on and on. It was quite hilarious.
You get people who, I mean, on our side, we have a little review section when customers can review their books. And sometimes I read them, I go, it says on the book, on the package, you're going to get this. And then you expected the absolute opposite. And you give it a bad review for being the opposite thing. Some of the biggest authors that have ever come through here admit to being obsessed with trolling the internet and trying to find
comments. It's hard not to be. On, yeah.
I mean, as a writer within the Australian market, it's kind of important to be across what's going on and who's...
Yeah, what's being said, definitely. And I think, I think you put so much of yourself in your books as well that... you know, even if it's not personal stories or, you know, things from your own life, obviously, it's a real labor of love, particularly in Australia where, you know, not many authors do this full time and that sort of thing. So I think, it is hard to avoid. And I am guilty of fixating on the bad ones as well. I got a lot of, not a lot. See, I've fixated again. I got a few people saying that they found my lead character, Georgie, who is also the lead character in Crazy Busy Guilty, they found her a bit selfish and unlikable. And I thought, geez, God, imagine if I wrote her the way I really wanted to write her, you know?
That whole unlikable thing, it drives me nuts.
Yeah, so, me too,
I don't need
to
like the characters in any novel I read.
No.
There's no imperative that I have to be best friends with the main character. And yet people feel that they can't read a book that has a character that does something that they wouldn't do or that...
Yeah,
they don't agree with.
Yes.
I mean, it's madness.
I know. It's interesting, isn't it? And, yeah, I don't really understand it either. I think a lot of people, you know, they see she's having her baby and perhaps some people will see Crazy Busy Guilty as sort of that, like, chick lit genre, and maybe there are expectations around that, you know, the lead character has to be, like, warm, fuzzy, totally relatable.
That's not even true because, I mean, Marion Keyes' books, they're not warm, funny, relatable. I mean, there's all these books that you can sort of list them in Sex and the City and Jesus. I mean,
absolutely.
There's a whole lot of books that have been really successful where the characters aren't perfect. There are points in them that you won't like. And they'll do things that you're offended by or in some way upsets you, but they're great books.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
Doesn't make any sense.
I know. Yeah. It baffles me a little bit, that one. I suppose I'm quite bemused by it as well. Cause I think, oh, okay, well, you know, that's your takeaway and you know, that's okay. But yeah, I don't really understand why you have to like every character.
It's one of those things that I think, when people talk about literary books or non-literary books, I think as you drift into what they class as literary, which is just often a bookseller decision, I'm going to put it in that shelf and not that shelf.
Yeah.
It's because characters become more troublesome.
Yes,
there's more, possibly. There's more of a 3D turnaround around them and there's more things they do which displease people.
Yes,
As you go. And I think that's, to me, I think that's when people talk about, oh, but it's a literary crime novel or...
Right.
It seems to be that the main character may be a bit grumpy or a bit more difficult to cope with or may do things they don't like.
So and there's so, more of an expectation?
Yeah. And so if you go down, I mean, I think if you're writing books that are read in 4 hours in an afternoon in the sort of the romance space, you might not find, and the main character will be perfect throughout.
Yes.
And it won't disturb anyone and go right through and do exactly what you expected to do, happy ever after. Great, I'm done. But as you move away from that, you sort of get more complex characters.
True.
We'll have sides that you don't like.
Well, you know, one of my favourite writers is Lionel Shriver, and, you know, it would be very difficult for me to pick a character that I actually like from any of her books, you know. Again, you know, like...
And she's put out, even though she sold, you know, thousands and thousands of copies, she's sort of drifted over to the literary area.
Yes.
And mostly, I'd say, Maybe we've just found what it all comes down to.
Just right. We've solved unlikable characters.
Yeah, we've solved the literary question. If you want to win the Booker, write characters no one likes.
Totally. Yeah. Yeah.
So when you're writing a book like this, are you writing for a group of friends that you know, or you have in your head a particular audience, or are you writing because it just makes you giggle yourself? Like when you who's your imagined audience for your books? Some people have a single person. They go, I want them to like this.
Yeah. Right. Okay. I suppose it's a bit of both. You know, I write, I want to write books that I enjoy. So, you know, I want to carve out something that, you know, is, something that I see as, you know, fun and enjoyable and, you know, a good read. But I also, I suppose my imagined audience is a group of my friends.
Yeah.
And so I guess, you know, they're women in their, you know, late 20s, early 30s. They are very busy, whether they have children or not. They, you know, they have a lot on, they're very interested in, you know, the world, I suppose, you know, they're educated, they like a bit of fun,
But do you have someone that you pass on chapters to who would be very blunt? You don't?
No, oh. I don't. Well, my husband, actually. Yeah. He's a good critic.
But is he doing it, is he trying to be your audience and trying to give you advice on that, or is he editing it going, that whole paragraph just doesn't work because of this structural problem, or like what sort of level is he?
He's more big picture, I suppose, yeah, rather than like, you know, individual paragraphs. And it sort of has to get to like a certain point in the story before I will give it to him. But then also I need to say to him, okay, like there's a cutoff time for your edits now, and you can't give me, you know, like a big structural change, you know, at this point, because, you know, he is doing sort of big picture stuff. But he is a really good critic because he's very honest in a loving way. but he's, you know, whereas if I was reading something of his, I would be sugarcoating it, and I'm just not, you know, that kind of, I don't know, I suppose that's not my personality. Whereas, yeah, he's much better at just sort of taking emotion away from it and saying, I think this is working, I think this is not working, you should, you know, maybe think about doing this instead.
I rely heavily on my wife. She's like, right, my husband. She just, really? Says, boom, that's beneath you, go do it again. Like, she'll just, that doesn't work at all.
It's good. Yeah. It's good. Yeah, I mean,
it's tough love.
Yeah, it is tough love. And, you know, it comes from a place of love, certainly. Yeah. It's, you know, it's a place of like improvement, and, you know, you can do better than this. And I think that's great. But yeah, certainly if the reverse was true, my husband would be putting out shit books, yeah, because I'd be like, that's great, it's beautiful, it's on the fantastic first draft. Yeah.
So there are a lot of people out there who are writing, writing books and working. What is your secret to doing both?
I don't really have a secret. I outsource a lot. So I try to tell everyone this, that it is totally fine to outsource, and you should never iron if you don't have to, and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't do things that I don't, you know, that would take away from my writing, I suppose.
But it's that sort of, if you're a writer, And a writer.
Yeah, it's hard.
It must be difficult to go, I'm going to sit down and write now. Which one am I going to?
Yes. So I try to, because I work from home largely, so I try to carve out, if I can, the first 1 or 2 hours of the morning. So I drop my daughter at preschool, come home, have my coffee, sit down, and try to do like 1 or 2 hour blocks. And then I get on with, you know, my actual, you know,
So novel first.
Okay. Because
I thought bills first, but no, novel first.
Novel first, because I feel like your mind is sharper, and then I feel like it's a bit like exercising in the morning. Yeah. You know, like you get it over with, and you feel really good about the day ahead, and all that sort of stuff. I try to wake up early, so if I'm on a deadline,
does your daughter give you any choice in that?
She's pretty good, actually. Oh, she? Okay. Touch on wood. Yeah, she wakes up around 7, which is, yeah.
So you get up earlier than that, you get up at 5 or something?
I get up about 5. Wow. Not all the time, yeah. But if I'm on a deadline or if I'm, you know, if you're on a roll with a book and you're like, you just want to keep going.
This is the kind of detail, because writers, there's a kind of a sense that, I do it here and there and I get it done if they're full-time working writers. But knowing that you get up at 5,
yeah,
and do it. I mean, yeah. People will ask, why has C got the book finished and I haven't? Yeah,
that's why.
Yeah, that's why. Yeah. You actually set that time and you go, I'm going to commit to that and I'm going to have a certain amount done by a certain period.
So yeah.
So you do that, your daughter wakes up, you do the breakfast thing, you take off
come back, do a bit more. And, you know, I tend to write quite fast. You know, I try to do the Pomodoro method. Have you heard of this? No. Where you do, like 25 minute blocks and then a 5 minute break. And then I think you do that 4 times and then you can have a 15 minute break. And that works really well for me, but you've got to have no distractions. So you've
unplugged.
Got to, yeah, total, you know, so I just turn the Wi-Fi off and things like that. And I hide my phone but then you get, you know, a 5 minute break where you go and make a cup of tea or, you know, you can check Facebook or whatever you want to do. But that works really well for me. And I think because it's, you know, it's quite bite sized, it's only 25 yeah. minutes, you can commit to it. And even if I've done no sort of novel writing that day, you know, during the day after dinner, sometimes I'll be like, you know what, I'll just do one 25 minute block because it's nothing, you know, it's a sitcom or, you know, whatever.
So, if you get inspired, because I was surprised when I spoke to Fiona McIntosh, who does put out a book every year, that she'll get to 2,000 words and stop. Like even if it was done in half an hour or some manic piece of writing or inspiration, she stops. Like boom, on that 2,000. Even mid sentence, she says sometimes she'll just stop.
You know, I think Stephen King does that as well.
It baffles me. If you're on a roll, just go.
Keep
with
going.
It.
Yeah.
And I wonder if you've ever continued on past your allotted slot and.
Yes, I have. Yeah. Just before, at the start of the month, we went away. But just before that, I was just on this roll and I wrote something like 15,000 words in 2 days.
Nice.
And just like, you know, really, really banged it out to the exclusion of, you know, almost everything else, really.
Yeah.
And it was great. And it was, I think you need bursts like that as a writer where you go, right, okay, this is working now. This is where this story is going. This is what this character's motivation is. I see this now.
Are we talking about book 3 here?
Yes, this is book 3,
So that next year you think it'll be coming out?
I hope that it will come out in, 2018, so it's quite different. It's not, you know, in the same universe as She's Having Her Baby or Crazy Busy Guilty. And it's a bit of a departure from those books, but I hope that, you know, my readers will read it and enjoy it. I'm quite enjoying the writing of it, so.
Well, that's always a good sign, because if you feel that the authors enjoyed themselves, then it sort of comes through on the writing.
I think so, yeah. I think you can definitely tell, yeah. I love Maria Semple's writing for that reason, because you could just tell she's having so much fun with those characters and making up those worlds, yeah.
Sometimes when an author, you know, for one thing, obviously gets inspired by something completely different and goes off and just does it. They sometimes become their best books. I mean, I think Ken Follett was doing thrillers and then wanted to write this big book about a cathedral being built in medieval period.
Right.
And his publisher's like, please don't. And it went on to be The Pillars of the Earth. It became a bestseller around the world.
There you go.
So it's sort of breaking away that I must write this one.
Yeah, it is a bit of a compulsion to write this one. So, yeah.
Lauren, thank you very much for coming and talking with us.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Crazy Busy Guilty is available right now and is a perfect read for the summer holidays, so get yourself a copy. All Lauren's books are available online, booktopia.com.au right now.
Thanks for listening to the Booktopia podcast. And don't forget to subscribe to us on SoundCloud and iTunes. And if your eyeballs need a workout, check us out on YouTube at Booktopia TV. And don't forget, for all books featured on this episode and all episodes of the Booktopia podcast, head to Booktopia, Australia's local bookstore, at www.booktopia.com.au. Thanks for listening.